WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Outrage is growing over President Trump's admission the entire East Wing of the White House will be destroyed to make room for a massive new ballroom. Brian Greene served on the commission that approved plans for federal buildings.
This is part of our heritage. This is part of our story as Americans. And we deserve to have that conversation about its fate and what happens to it.
Trump administration's attacks on alleged South American drug boats spreading out. CBS's Charlie Daggett.
These are the first two strikes announced in the Pacific, totaling 9 known strikes in less than 2 months. One boat was taken out in the eastern Pacific Ocean, the other off the coast of Colombia.
The U.S. has imposed new restrictions targeting Russia's two largest oil companies. Correspondent Nancy Cordes.
As for these new U.S. sanctions on Russia, Moscow responded overnight, calling them extremely counterproductive to finding peace in Ukraine.
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
Come out to support the Boys of Winter. Join in the excitement and the thrill of each Wisconsin Rapids River Kings home game. Come cheer on the team with your friends at 105.5 FM.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. The government shutdown continues. Lawmakers failed at their 11th attempt to come up with a deal, and now some Wisconsinites could be at risk of going hungry. Governor Tony Evers says the state's food share program will run out of money in a little over a week. He says the Trump administration had told state officials that there's only enough funding to continue food benefits through the end of October. Nearly 700,000 people across Wisconsin rely on these benefits, from young families struggling with low wages to people with disabilities to seniors on fixed incomes. USDA officials said they were working on a backup plan if the shutdown continued, but so far we haven't heard what that plan is. Department of Health Services Secretary Kristen Johnson says people with Quest cards for their food share benefits should know that the money may not be available once we hit November 1st, even if there was money left at the end of October. So she advises people with Quest cards to stock up and use all the money on their cards before the end of the month. Of course, this comes as more people are experiencing hunger. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is inviting people to celebrate Forest Products Week. Isabella Nieto reports.
According to a press release, the state's forestry industry generates an estimated $27 billion in goods each year and supports over 56,000 jobs, leading to a total economic impact value of over $41 billion. Forest Products Week is meant to recognize the workers who help sustain the crucial industry in the state. More information on the economic impact of Wisconsin's forestry industry is available on the DNR's website. I'm Isabella Nieto.
And I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI News.
The Bucks lose Porter.
Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports NBA. The Bucks won their opener last night, 133-120, against the Wizards at Fiserv Forum, but they lost guard Kevin Porter Jr., who went down at the end of the first quarter with a sprained left ankle after stepping on teammate Bobby Portis's foot. Doc Rivers asked if he saw what happened.
No, it didn't look good. I'll just say that, you know. So he's going to do an MRI tomorrow. We just got to hope for the best, but looking at it, it was a pretty bad sprain.
The NFL is named Micah Parsons, NFC Defensive Player of the Week. Parsons will be after Steelers quarterback Aaron Rodgers next on Sunday Night Football. Rodgers asked if playing the Pack is a revenge game for him.
I don't have any animosity toward the organization. Obviously, I wish that, you know, things have been better in our last year there, but, you know, I have a great relationship with a lot of people still in that organization. This is not a revenge game for me. I'm just excited to see some of those guys and be on Sunday Night Football again.
That's Aaron Rodgers with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Catch Farm Report updates throughout the day from the Midwest Farm Report right here on 97.5 WFHR.
It is going to be partly cloudy today with highs in the mid to upper 40s here this afternoon. Tonight, partly cloudy and frosty. We are going to drop into the mid to upper 20s for an overnight low. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with highs in the low to mid 50s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 39.
From Eau Claire to Green Bay.
Oh, my goodness, a powerful run to the house.
house.
And Milwaukee to Madison.
Under duress, and it's a safety.
The tradition of Badger football lives here.
Touchdown, Wisconsin.
Join us Saturday. Wisconsin heads west to take on the Oregon Ducks. Our coverage begins at 4.
Now we'll get rolling.
On your home for Wisconsin football.
Looking pressured and sacked.
The Badger Sports Network from Learfield.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand, when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Pete Schwaba. On the next Nightlight, Jason Mansmith from Green Lake's Thrasher Theater makes the popcorn pick of the week. Then Chris Rogowski from Chicken or the Egg Photography makes an in-studio visit. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. Locally grown radio, WFHR.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, good morning. It is 7:06. Nice to have you back here up north on a Thursday morning, October 23rd, 2025. Parker Olson producing things down in Madison Studio A2. Not just producing. Turns out he's an aspiring news journalist and is going to tell us all about that story you might have just missed in the newscast coming up in just a little bit. And also ahead this hour, we're going to be talking to a guest, Megan Lowe, about how some of the recent political moves that are impacting healthcare access and affordability are hurting mothers and their medical decisions when it comes to some of their children who might have developmental or other disabilities. So listen for that coming up at 7:35. And then in our next hour, we'll talk to Joe Zepecki, as well as Chad Holmes from our Civic Media station in Wausau. And Sean O'Malley will be along to talk about your money and the markets. We'll talk a little state investment in cryptocurrency. We'll talk a little, why is Trump sending enough money to Argentina that could pay to keep our health insurance premiums from going up, kind of stuff. That's all ahead in our 8 o'clock hour. So a lot of ground to cover here. But I also wanted to take note of something that came up in our 8 o'clock hour yesterday with our friend Earl Ingram. And as we were talking about his podcast that you can find here at civicmedia.us, I made mention of a New York Times article that was especially critical of the prospect of former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes running for governor. As has been rumored that Mandela Barnes is thinking about getting into the race. He would be propelled immediately to at or near the front of the pack, having A, been lieutenant governor, and B, run a very close campaign against Senator Ron Johnson back in 2022, where he lost by the smallest margin ever in Wisconsin U.S. Senate election history. And of course, I've had a lot to say about whether it was so much that Mandela Barnes lost the race or that Ron Johnson's billionaire buddies were able to scare enough people about Mandela Barnes to help Ron Johnson win. But whatever you believe is the case, there are clearly people that look at the former lieutenant governor and say, well, he lost in 2022. And so if he couldn't win that statewide race against somebody as unpopular as Ron Johnson, they don't want to take a chance on him next time around. And there wasn't much for direct quotes in there. There was one direct quote from former Lieutenant Governor Barbara Lawton, who said something along the lines of that, you know, he proved that he could, he wasn't running hard enough and couldn't win the campaign on a statewide basis. And so there is clear that there is some unease there. But Earl Ingram yesterday was very critical of the report, said that the New York Times reporter had meant to call him Earl, but did not, for, you know, his own comment and take on the race, and really stuck with just the critics of Mandela Barnes. And that would be enough of a story if it stopped right there. But then
yesterday from a black-owned newspaper in the city of Milwaukee, the Milwaukee Courier, comes the editorial that reads, "We can't afford to lose in 2026, and we can't risk another Mandela Barnes loss." And again, it was highly critical, especially in this sense, that even though Mandela Barnes came close and the primary field had cleared for him to take on Ron Johnson, he lost by some 26,000 votes. But not just that, he ran about 50,000 votes behind Governor Tony Evers, who you'll recall was on the ballot for re-election that year. And that even in Milwaukee County, Mandela Barnes ran behind Tony Evers. In other words, reads the editorial, he couldn't finish the deal. And the editorial says, let's be clear, this is not personal. Mandela's story is one of promise. He's bright. He's passionate. But this moment is not about promise. It's about performance. In politics, you earn your next opportunity by delivering on the last one. And in 2022, Mandela didn't. That Senate seat was ours to win. He had national support. He had resources. He had the attention. And still, he came up short. And what's more, it says, instead of spending the past 2 years organizing here at home, building bridges, proving he learned from that loss, what we've seen is a campaign in waiting with no clear rationale other than a desire to try again. And that's not enough. Now, I would take issue with that on a couple of fronts here, that Mandela Barnes has hardly been spending his time twiddling his thumbs and waiting for the next race. He has worked with a group, Forward Together Wisconsin, that has tried to match new federal green energy resources with homeowners and with school districts and more. He's formed a political action committee designed to help other candidates to, you know, make a run for office. He's appeared on this show a couple of times. I am not in any way telling you that Mandela Barnes ran a perfect campaign for U.S. Senate. He didn't. He fell short. But he also went up against the buzzsaw of literal billionaires who literally made millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars, because Ron Johnson gave them a sweetheart tax deal in the 2017 tax bill. And they were willing to take those hundreds of millions of dollars in taxes they no longer had to pay, meaning you and I had to make up the difference in the taxes that these billionaires weren't paying. And instead, they put that money into a Ron Johnson campaign. So I'm not here to tell you that anybody would have necessarily beat Ron Johnson, even though the man is consistently underwater. He's not popular in the state. But every year at election time, he or his cronies find just enough negative material, just enough negative ads for Ron Johnson to squeak out narrow victories. And while he, I would guess, not run for a fourth term in 2028, if he were to run, that would probably be the formula again. But the question here is about whether Mandela Barnes is the right choice to run for governor. And you know, as noted in some of the reaction to this editorial, you know, there are people in the Milwaukee area that still are unhappy that Mandela Barnes, when he was in the state assembly, ran a primary challenge against fellow Democratic state senator Lena Taylor. And that just gets us into the whole inside baseball of Milwaukee politics overall. And by the way, that's not just a Milwaukee thing. There's inside politics about, you know, Chippewa Valley politics that we could talk about. And we've talked before about the 8th district, the 8th congressional district in Northeast Wisconsin. And especially on the Republican side, there's a lot of inside baseball that most voters, frankly, don't want to hear about. But it's real. And it's what gets in the way of, you know, races that are clear and not filled with primaries that can get messy. And that's definitely the case in Milwaukee. I've watched that for decades, and I know how, you know, there in when you get into regional politics like Milwaukee, the Chippewa Valley, Northeast Wisconsin, elsewhere, the cliques are worthy of high school. You know, who likes who doesn't like who, and it gets rather annoying sometimes if you're just an observer. If you're inside of one of those cliques, you actually have real genuine feelings, not of love, of your fellow Republican or your fellow Democrat. I will be the first one to say publicly that I have said privately many a time, there were some Republicans in the legislature that I got along with better than a couple of Democrats in the state capitol. People that I would you know, be very happy to have seen replaced, and that I could have worked more with a couple of moderate Republicans. And there are moderate Republicans who feel the same way about some of their Republican brethren. So having set the stage that not everybody in politics gets along, even if they're of the same political party, you have to open up the blinders and ask yourself, okay, can this candidate win? That's what Democrats are facing in the 3rd Congressional District right now. They're looking at Becca Cook. This is now her third time running in the 3rd Congressional District. The last time around, she ran as the Democratic nominee. She fell short against Derek Van Orden. And you have very clear sets of Democrats there, some who believe she was almost there, a little bit more support, and we can finally, you know, have representation other than Derek Van Orden in the 3rd Congressional District, and others who say, nope, she's peaked. That's as close as she's going to get. It is time to try somebody new. That's why you have the primaries. And if Mandela Barnes wants to get into a primary for governor, he's going to get into the primary, and he's going to have to answer these questions about why he trailed Governor Evers in Milwaukee County voting in 2022. Why it is that some Democrats in the Milwaukee area, in the 4th Congressional District, just don't warm up to him. He'll have to address that if he wants to get in. And if he answers those questions to the satisfaction of others, same as Becca Cook in the 3rd Congressional District, or in some of the legislative districts where there are now multiple Democrats running for office, well, then that builds you a stronger nominee. Hopefully. Not always. There are times when primaries are absolutely destructive. The quintessential example for me is the 2012 primary among Republicans for U.S. Senate. That's how Tammy Baldwin got elected. Tammy Baldwin, people did not give her, easy odds of winning. But Tommy Thompson, the former governor, emerged from a bruising three-way Republican primary. The Republicans at the end of that primary cycle hated each other. And there was not a lot of instant general election support for Tommy Thompson. Tammy Baldwin masterfully took advantage of that and made sure people understood how much more moderate, easygoing, sensible, sane she was compared to a dysfunctional field on the other side of the aisle, won that election, and has proven herself again and now again running for a third term. So primaries are just a way of life in this system. And Mandela Barnes will have to expect that one way or the other if he decides to run for governor. And he hasn't decided that yet, at least not publicly that we know about. But I thought it was important that we talk about the fact that unlike when he ran for Senate, the decks are not going to clear. The sea is not going to part, and other primary challengers say, you know, he is going to be the most popular one. Let's coalesce behind him. It's not going to happen this time. He or Sarah Rodriguez or David Crawley or Kelda Royce or Francesca Hong or Missy Hughes, they're going to have to earn it. But if they earn it in a primary that stays above board, that does not devolve into what the Republicans did in 2012, then they have that much better odds of that nominee being able to hold on to the governor's office in Wisconsin. Because in a cycle where Donald Trump is as unpopular as any president has ever been, if Democrats cannot ride that wave to holding the governor's office, taking over the assembly and the Senate, and maybe even sweeping some Republican incumbents like Derek Van Orden out of office, well, then that will have been a terrible opportunity lost, primarily because of inside politics. And that's not what anybody wants to see. In sports, the NBA season is underway, and the Milwaukee Bucks won their opener at home against the Washington Wizards, 133-120. Giannis Antetokounmpo put up 37 points, 14 rebounds, and 5 assists. There was a very hearty welcome back for former teammate Chris Middleton, who's now with Washington. Big standing ovation during pregame introductions. Another big ovation when they played a video tribute to him during the first timeout of the game. So it was the best of all things. You got to welcome back an old friend and at the same time beat him and his old team. The kind of thing we should have done a better job of with Willie Adames. But that's another story. Coming up in 15 minutes, we're going to talk to our guest Megan Lowe about how Republican political moves have been hurting families who are about to see healthcare costs spike. And that's especially harmful for families that have a member with developmental or other disabilities. That's all coming up live from the heart of America's up north here on Lake Wissota. I'm Pat Whitelow from Up North News. This is a radio network. You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids Home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
As the year winds down, it's time for a financial tune-up. Here are some steps to consider. If you're 73 or older, you'll need to take required minimum distributions from traditional retirement accounts to avoid a 25% penalty on any amount you should have withdrawn but didn't. And if you're still working, consider ramping up your pre-tax retirement contributions. Not only will this help your future self, but it might reduce your current tax bill. Now is a good time to review your investments. Did they perform as expected? Do they still match your goals? You may need to rebalance. One more thing. If you've had major life changes like marriage, divorce, or a new baby, review the beneficiary designations on all bank and brokerage accounts. These often override what's written in your will. Taking care of these and other financial tasks now can help you start the new year on solid ground.
This content was provided by Edward Jones for use by Clay Kanoki, your Wisconsin Rapids Edward Jones financial advisor at 715-421-0958.
My part-time service in the Army National Guard makes it possible for me to be more for the community I call home. My training helps me at work when I lead by example. My service in the Army National Guard allows me to keep my community and those I care about safe from threats. Learn more about how you too can live and serve part-time close to home by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard, aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
In August, Patty and Eddie of Cabins on the Lake in Friendship lost their home in a devastating fire. These two people are always the first to help others, and now it's our turn to help them. Join us for a fun benefit Saturday, November 1st from noon until 5 p.m. at Connell's Cedar Shack in Adams. Music, food, live and silent auctions with awesome prizes, 50-50s, and lots of fun. All proceeds go to assist Patty and Eddie rebuild. Join us November 1st at Connell's Cedar Shack, just south of Adams on Highway 13. You'll have a good time for a great cause.
Every 15 seconds, someone is diagnosed with cancer. If it's happened to you or someone you love, the American Cancer Society can help at every step of the journey. Visit cancer.org today.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, and now for something local from WFHR and WIRI studios.
I feel like this Sierra Park thing is one of those good kind of like in-between places of a lot of our cities in this area that brings us more together.
Yeah, you and I have talked about that for years. You know, we're not, most people don't know where the county borders are. They certainly don't know where the municipal borders are, but we are a community. And I always say, you know, where do you draw the line between, not that we're trying to, but between, even between Wisconsin Rapids and Stevens Point, you know, where does Plover fit into that? Mm-hmm. It's really not in Point. It's a long way here, you know, and even those local businesses, you know, benefit greatly both directions. Whether you're coming down the river, you know, I'm not trying to do commercial plugs, but, you know, you do have opportunities. You come down, you know, we have people from here that go that direction up, you know, to Rusty's or Club Forest. We have people that come from that direction down to Anchor Bay. Those are hugely beneficial to our area. And the more that we can provide, the more likely we are to thrive as a community, not just a county, not a city, not a town or village.
Well said. And you can mention any business. You just give me a cut. Just give me and Joe a cut. That's
we'll,
all.
We'll talk
you
to
can
them.
Mention the business.
see what they're willing to do.
Right. We're speaking with Woodcutting Board Chairman Lance Plimmel right now. And Lance, certainly one of the bigger things on the docket for you and the team on our board was the budget. And we're going to be releasing some numbers on that tomorrow, it sounds like.
Yeah, tomorrow. The budget has to be published tomorrow. It's always interesting. Frankly, it's my least favorite time of the year. I kind of like to look at the big picture, operational, and then you get down to how do you make it all work and how do the nuts and bolts all come together to make this happen. And this year, just to give you some perspective, the county budget this year is $157 million. This sounds funny, give or take a couple hundred thousand. But, as we fine-tune stuff, but, it takes a lot of couple hundred thousands to make even a small percentage change in that $157 million. So we got a $157 million budget. Of that, what's pretty interesting, only $35 million of that roughly is property tax. So you got a $157 million budget. A lot of that is pass-through money from federal and state agencies and or governments. You got $35 million of property tax revenue. If you subtract that difference, the 35 is about what we have to use on what you would call local programs, law enforcement, highway department, you know, things like that. The other stuff is generally already, you know, allocated for programs that we are required or mandated to provide. So although it's a big number, the percentage that we can actually use is fairly small. I think the most significant part for the taxpayer, you know, we just put up a $100 million jail. It's not quite that much, but that's a round number again. Despite that, our tax rate this year is going from, the mill rate was 465 last year, it's 439 this year. So, you know, that's kind of kudos to our department heads, to those employees, to people, for instance, in the parks department who get parks open in a hurry. We're not bringing in a lot of independent contractors to do work we do. And yet we're cognizant of the fact that it impacts people's lives. I mean, it's property tax, which is probably the most regressive tax there is, but it is what it is. And that concerns us. And I had somebody the other day, a very intelligent person came to me and said, well, why does the county borrow any money every year when they do a big project like this? Why don't they just save for it? You know, build up a reserve fund and do it. And the attitude, I can tell you this going back my 30 years, is I don't want to take money out of your pocket and keep it in our account until we need it. We'll ask for it if we actually need it. And it reminds me of kind of income tax when I hear people oftentimes, I'm going to get in trouble with even my own relatives for saying this, but they go, oh, I got a giant tax refund at the end of the year. Isn't that great? I'm going, why would you let the government use your money for anywhere from, you know, 1 to 12 months when if you put it in the bank, it might even have kicked you off another couple, $200, $300, maybe thousands of dollars if you're a high income earner. Why? Well, I get it all at once. I go, I get that. And you may be less inclined to spend it if you get it, you know, if you see the bigger chunk. But the philosophy from the county's been, until we need it, we're not going to ask you for it.
Are there projects or are there things that you think are going to affect that coming up or going in the future?
Obviously, you know, inflation's gone through the roof on especially building materials and roads. I mean, things that we used to do for, you know, $500,000, let's say a mile, is now $1 million a mile. You see the price of, anybody's put in a driveway recently knows what that is. Gas prices are coming down. That's going to help us. But any construction we do, right now we have a real major project going on, replacement of pipes up at our Northwood County Annex, and that was Norwood for those who wonder what the Northwood County Annex was. That's a $4 million project. And you go, well, why would you do that? Well, there's the possibility of contamination due to the old piping in there. Health departments and others said, this has to be government regulations. This has to be done. It wasn't done for 50 years, you know, because typically, you know, most people, it might be a good idea to replace the battery in your car after 4 years, but who really replaces it until your car doesn't start that morning?
Right.
And that, I think, has been the attitude a lot of times. We're doing a fairly big project, or will be doing a fairly big project right down the road here from your station at Edgewater, the nursing home. And we're doing that to facilitate more revenue so we have less impact to the taxpayer as we go forward. There's an initial impact, but if we look at over 10 years, it's beneficial. The jail was as well. I mean, that was a huge upfront cost, but in the long run, it's going to save us about $30 million over 20 years as opposed to keeping the old jail.
Whether we're talking about the city or we're talking about any old business, you have to spend money to make money. That's business 101. And when you're talking about the businesses, a city's business, a city's economics, or a city making money or anything like that, everything you've mentioned there and everything I've seen since I've lived in this area has really tried to do that, if not done it. The jail is a perfect example of this, of yes, you're paying this up front, but the long-term effects, the 20, 30, 40, 50, 60-year effects of this, you're making money. You're saving your community money.
Yeah, we're not spending as much. You know, and you've seen the change in the landscape downtown. I mean, it's phenomenal. When you look at what just came down, you know, we had an old annex building there that we owned that was not able to be occupied due to contamination, mold, other things over the years. Those are really old buildings. And you saw us take down some other buildings as we're reconfiguring parking down there. Part of that was a really cooperative effort working with the city and saying, how do we make the downtown more attractive to both attract people, to retain those that we have down there, and then make it a more genial gathering spot. Yeah. You know, you look at some of these other communities and the opportunities they have downtown to bring people in. And between the county's efforts and the city's efforts, I think in the long run, you're going to see a much more user-friendly, attractive downtown.
Our community is adapting better than most, and I've got friends around the country.
You were listening to the Rapids Report, sponsored by Crockett Septic. To hear the full interview, visit WFHR.com, the Civic Media app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
Farm news that impacts you and your community from the Midwest Farm Report throughout your day on 97.5 WFHR. Oh, you bet. Wisconsin beef producers, whether they're native beef or dairy beef, they're worried about Argentina beef entering their marketplace. I'm Pam Yonke, starting you off before the opening bell on a Thursday morning. Quick look at what's happening in agribusiness news, and we'll hear what one Wisconsin beef producer worries about most. That's next.
What is the Dairyland seed difference? The answer is found in our difference makers. Our seeds are developed and delivered for unrivaled performance in and only in the Upper Midwest. Our local dealers, expert agronomists, and everyone throughout our organization who live to make life better on farms and in the community. It's our people, products, and pedigree that combine to make a true difference that you can see on the bottom line and feel in your heart. Learn more about our difference makers at DairylandSeedDifference.com.
Grady Zooks, a beef producer just outside of Ladysmith. He's also a member of the Wisconsin Cattlemen's Association. He said what bothers him is consumers are still buying beef, even at an escalated price. That's why the idea of bringing Argentinian beef into the U.S. marketplace bothers him.
We're near the high of our 10-year cycle right now based on limited cattle inventory. There's just less calves around to feed. So, you know, it's a cycle, right? Things go up, things go down, and these are the times where we as producers can be profitable, make money, and then save that up for the good or the times that come that aren't as rich. What really concerns me, you know, is the outside, you know, manipulation, you could say, of the cattle market, right? Cattle market's based on free trade principles, supply and demand, and any kind of outside intervention really wreaks havoc in our markets.
Brady Zook, a member of the Wisconsin Cattlemen's Association, a beef producer himself by Ladysmith, irritated at the idea of Argentinian beef being introduced to the U.S. marketplace. One item to make note of, we're finding out that today the U.S. Department of Agriculture may reopen Farm Service Agency offices to release about $3 billion in aid directly to farmers. This happening despite the government shutdown continuing. It's a developing story we'll keep an eye on. Keeping an eye on markets, those numbers are next.
No one should have to navigate herd health alone. Luckily, you don't have to. A successful operation requires teamwork. Visit bio-vet.com and let us help identify key challenges and offer expert solutions unique to your situation. We evaluate your full herd health plan and make economical recommendations to your operation. Learn more about our team and products for herd health at bio-vet.com.
Innovation.
This morning, December corn is up a penny at 424. November beans are up 2 at 1037. July wheat's unchanged. Yesterday, the barrel cheese dropped 2 to 175.5. 40-pound block cheese was down 2.5 at 174. And AA butter dropped 3.5 on Wednesday to 154.5 per pound. There's your market snapshot on a Thursday. I'm Pam Yonke.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR. Rapids home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m.
It is going to be partly cloudy today with highs in the mid to upper 40s here this afternoon. Tonight, partly cloudy and frosty. We are going to drop into the mid to upper 20s for an overnight low. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with highs in the low to mid 50s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 39.
He scores! Wow! He ripped one over the glove of Heaney!
It's on. In America's college hockey capital.
Empty net goal at the horn. Badgers finish Michigan.
Badger hockey lives here.
Sponsored by Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep, Econ Electric Inc., Rapids Transmission, Junkyard Bar & Grill, and 8th Street Auto. Listen on 97.5 FM and on the Civic Media app.
How serious is youth vaping? Irreversible lung damage serious? 1 in 10 kids vape serious? Which warrants a serious conversation from a serious parental figure, like yourself. Not the seriously know-it-all sports dad, or the seriously smart podcaster. It requires a serious conversation that is best had by you. No, seriously, the best person to talk to your child about vaping is you. To start the conversation, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Todd Alba.
Hey everybody, the midterm elections might be a year away, but there is a sleeper issue out there that may be the key to Democrats winning. We'll discuss it next time. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
This next topic is a little more on the mature side when it comes to politics, policy, and the real-world impact on people, and includes discussions about sexual assault, but also about the medical decisions that have to be made by families. It gets beyond the what I would say is just outright game-playing that's happening in places like the nation's capital right now, where healthcare some people just seems to be a case of numbers on a spreadsheet, and that these are very generic concerns. But when it comes to people, families with people who have developmental and other disabilities, this is no game. And we're not just talking about the medications that people need on a daily basis. There is, for an example, a statistic that says somewhere around 80% of women who have developmental disabilities or intellectual disabilities, around 80% have been sexually assaulted at some point in life. And so access to things like contraception and the full range of reproductive health care services is vitally important, and yet is under threat in so many ways through Medicaid cuts, through cuts to premium tax credits that make health insurance affordable through the Affordable Care Act, and much more. It's these kinds of real issues that Megan Lowe has to deal with her daughter, Nora. And she joins us now to talk to us about that from the Merrimack area. Megan, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. We're doing great here.
Good. And you have Nora there with you as well. Can you tell us just a little bit about Nora's story?
Sure. Nora is 17 years old. She has what is called Rett syndrome, R-E-T-T. It's a neurological disorder. It affects everything she does, but she is a 17-year-old inside, so she understands us. It's just her expressive language and her body control that really hinder her daily life.
Yeah, it's a case of, like you said, muscle control, speaking, walking, seizures are a feature as well.
Yes.
And this is something that does not currently have a cure, as I understand.
Correct. No, there are just ways to mitigate symptoms.
Mm-hmm. So that takes us to the need for all sorts of affordable health insurance resources. And mm-hmm. I am going to assume that you are not independently wealthy, and that health insurance and medications and things for Nora are probably a constant struggle.
Mm-hmm. We do have private insurance, but a lot of our private insurance, they don't cover a lot of her daily needs. Those are picked up by Medicaid. Like her formulas, she eats through a G-tube, all of her syringes, diapers, wipes, even some of the durable medical equipment, our private insurance does not cover. So I'm really worried to think of families that do rely on ACA. How are they going to get these items that they need for their child to survive on a daily basis?
Yeah, because again, so part of it is through Medicaid, and part of it as well would be through these enhanced premium tax credits. These are things that were added through the Biden administration and Congress 4 years back mm-hmm. to help make these plans under the Affordable Care Act more affordable. So between the expiration of these enhanced premium tax credits for the Affordable Care Act and the approximately $1 trillion in cuts coming to Medicaid, I can only ask you to speak for yourself, but how concerned are you when you hear about healthcare cuts in these two different areas?
I'm incredibly concerned, because how are we supposed to prop up and support our state's most vulnerable people? especially when they are at risk of such egregious actions, just by having a disability and being a woman. The fact that under the Affordable Care Act, birth control is free with insurance. There's no copay. If they let these premium tax credits expire, women will lose coverage. They're going to lose protection. I don't understand why they're trying to get rid of tools in our toolbox. As caregivers, these are off-ramps that we need to have access to, and they're taking them away.
And doing so, again, to a population that was vulnerable to begin with, but as I noted at the top of the segment here, there is a depressingly large number of, you know, sexual assaults of one type or another that take place for women with developmental and intellectual disabilities. And so you had to have this very real conversation about making sure that Nora had contraception.
Yep. We spoke with her medical team, and they approached it as I was doing it as a caregiver to limit the number of periods, or, you know, to make her care easier. And I said, no, the actual reason is because she has an over 80% chance of being sexually assaulted in her lifetime. It's 50% of having it happen more than once. That is the reason why we're putting her on contraception. And then, of course, sure, there's a lot of women go on contraception for other reasons. And those are just some benefits that we will see when she's on it. So we cannot lose this for this vulnerable population. This is just so important that we cannot lose this. We cannot lose the tax credits.
No. And for folks who might be saying, well, I mean, if she needs virtually 24-hour care, how is it that she's unsupervised? I can tell you, not just as a from a family standpoint, I can tell you from a journalist standpoint, again, a depressing number of news stories that have been done over the years of people who were, you know, violated by people who were in their care for a short time, or an acquaintance or anything like that. So this need for contraceptive services is extremely real, along with all of the other medications. And then you've got the nature of Medicaid itself, which in Wisconsin covers around 1 out of 3 births to begin with. So Medicaid truly is a lifeline to all sorts of families around Wisconsin.
Without affordable coverage, women are going to lose their right to no-cost contraception. Premiums are going to rise. Women are going to pay the price. Women with disability, I mean, what are we going to do? We can't at the federal level, the special education, I just feel like this vulnerable group of people, they are just being forgotten about.
And I have to say again, startling statistic that I was aware of being married to an OBGYN, and of course knowing several of them as well, is that there are at times 1 in 5 uninsured women who say they've had to stop using a birth control method because they couldn't afford it. And again, that shouldn't be a thing, Megan.
No, it shouldn't be a thing. That is reproductive health care.
Megan Lowe is our guest. She's a mom and caregiver to Nora. We're talking about how cuts to health care, whether it's Affordable Care Act insurance premiums or Medicaid cuts, are having a real impact on families, and real concern for families that maybe haven't felt the impact yet, but it sure seems like they're going to if this government shutdown continues on. Have you done outreach to any elected officials about this? Clearly, it's good that you're speaking out about this, but I wonder if you've had interaction with elected officials in the past and whether they share your level of concern.
Oh, definitely. Diane Hesselbein and Lisa Subek, we have been working with them for the Access to Contraception Act. The Republicans... they're not interested. This act would ensure that people have access to contraception and the reproductive care that they need. But it's not going anywhere because we know the political environment in the Capitol. So I mean, people are talking about it. There is legislation. It's just hard to get things going down at the Capitol.
It really is. And we're talking about the state capitol here. You've had discussions, mm-hmm. I know, with Republican lawmakers. And I mean, do you feel like you've come away that they either don't empathize or maybe don't even believe you when you talk about your concerns?
I feel like when it's a face-to-face conversation, they definitely empathize with us and they seem to support us. That's why I don't understand the disconnect between the actual voting for legislation versus just the lip service.
Well, there's another topic that we hear about with that, and that deals with, cannabis and, legalization of, mm-hmm. THC and things like that. That's something that you're concerned about as well from the standpoint of, pain management and things like that.
Definitely. Nora and I are part of the Wisconsin Wellness Coalition. We're working with, we actually just worked with Senator Testin and Senator Filskowski. Their medical bill that they are introducing is really great. And I really hope that it gets traction because that also really helps women with disabilities, women and men with disabilities throughout the state. Again, it's our most vulnerable people in the state that seem to be overlooked. This is a safety issue. These people exist. They are loved. They are in our families. They deserve a place at the table.
And it's also, frankly, a convenience issue. Wisconsin is quickly becoming an island surrounded by states that have provided mm-hmm. some form of legalization, at least for, medical use of cannabis products. And mm-hmm. so there's a whole lot of Wisconsinites that face a very long drive for an assortment of services and products right now.
Well, I'm a breast cancer survivor. I was diagnosed in 2023, and I have utilized our neighboring cannabis for my treatment and to get better. And it was amazing. Mm-hmm. And I testified to that. I feel like there are a lot of issues in the state capitol that they have the support. The Contraception Access Act, cannabis. The Republican legislator is just not letting those bills come forward. And there is support. And it's very sad to see.
It is because, again, at both levels, at the state legislative level and at the federal congressional level, there are things that can be done at the federal level. Maybe not slash, $1 trillion from Medicaid. And at the state okay. level, maybe accept the Medicaid expansion and cover more people so that they, that they have affordable care. Mm-hmm. So moving forward, Megan, then as people hear about this shutdown and they hear that it deals with healthcare issues like the enhanced premium credits for the Affordable Care Act, what is the ultimate takeaway? What is it that you hope people think about moving forward whenever they start hearing the news reports about the shutdown dragging on?
Well, when premiums rise, women are going to pay the price. Congress needs to keep the premium tax credits in place to protect contraception and reproductive care. There is no way around it. I'm not sure what we're going to do for these people if they don't.
Megan Lowe joins us from the Merrimack area with her daughter, Nora, to talk to us more about how this is all real. This isn't just some game that they play in Washington. It's mm-hmm. not just some stalling that they do in Madison. There are real people and lives affected by this. And Megan, I appreciate so much that you were able to take time with us today and help share Nora's story and your story with us all. Thank you again. I hope you have a good day.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Megan, very much. Still ahead, coming up in the next hour, we will be talking to Sean O'Malley about your money and the markets. We'll be talking to Chad Holmes from 98.9 WXCO in Wausau. And, of course, catching up on the week's political news with Joe Zepecki. I'm Pat Kreitlow from Up North News. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
There's nothing like when you get that part from eBay and it just fits. Yeah, the first time. So you can do less of this and get right back to more of this. At eBay, you'll find all the parts you need
guaranteed to fit, at prices you'll love. Sounds good, doesn't it? eBay. Things people love. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack, but not with ZipRecruiter. Its powerful technology actively finds and invites qualified candidates to apply to your job. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you the needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free.
Are you ever questioning when life will slow down? Are you ever thinking of just relaxing and enjoying the simple things? All of this is possible, even while still being in the workforce. Worthington, Minnesota is a town growing, yet it's nothing like metro life. Professional and labor jobs, a beautiful lake, bike trails, recreation, acres of public hunting, festivals, and great people. Slow down. We're just a short drive away. So come join us. Worthington, it's worth a look.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. A lawyer who had multiple phone calls with President Donald Trump during the January 6th insurrection has been appointed by the president to investigate debunked allegations that widespread fraud changed the outcome of the 2020 election. He has 130 days as a special government employee to complete his assignment. The Wall Street Journal reported October 17th that Kurt Olson, a product liability attorney turned Trump election lawyer, was appointed to look into President Trump's claims that the 2020 election was stolen. According to the January 6th Select Committee report, it was Olson who drafted a memo on January 2nd entitled "The Role of the Vice President in Receiving Votes from the Electoral College," and he spoke with Trump 3 times on January 6th. The Detroit News reports that Olson has recently been involved in defending another Trump election lawyer, Stephanie Lambert, from accusations she and others tampered with Michigan electronic vote tabulators. He defended U.S. Senate and Arizona gubernatorial candidate Carrie Lake in her baseless challenges to the 2022 election. A judge sanctioned Olson for, quote, "false, misleading, and unsupported factual assertions," though his fines were later dropped. Two good government groups later filed ethics complaints in Maryland and Washington, D.C. for an alleged, quote, "pattern of unethical conduct." We've linked to more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
As Wisconsin has a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, and now for something local from WFHR and WIRI Studios.
Hello, world. Welcome to WFHR's Rapids Report, proudly brought to you by Crockett Septic, for this Wednesday, October 22nd, 2025. Have your host, James, here. We're joined right now by our friends from the ODC, and we have joined in with us right now, Erin Smith. She is the president and CEO of the ODC, and this is her first time joining us. Erin, good to meet you.
Hello. Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me today.
I was telling Erin in our pregame, I've heard nothing but good things about you. It's great to put a face to the name and all of that, and for the community to put a voice to the name, if you will. Appreciate how have you been in enjoying things? How have you? How have things been going? Your first time here with us?
Yes, it's been fantastic. I started in May, so I've got about 6 months under my belt now. I've been very familiar with ODC for decades in prior areas of my work in long-term care and home and community-based services, but it is my first time being on the provider side. So it's been really exciting. I have a fantastic team. It's an amazing community. The community is so supportive of us and all the different areas that we are located in. So it's been really fun getting to know people and just appreciate this opportunity to share a little bit about myself and what we're doing at ODC now.
Yeah, let's if you don't mind, just a little bit more about you. You from this area, your background, you mentioned a little bit of your work background.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am from Wapaka. I do not live in the Rapids area, but I've worked within Stevens Point, Rapids, Marshfield for a number of years. I worked in long-term care on the managed care side for over a decade. I've worked within the provider association space for a while. I also ran my own independent consulting business for some time, working directly with providers who were doing transformational kinds of projects and work. So kind of skated all around the provider land. And now just really happy to be back kind of closer to where the action is really happening and getting to support folks every day that need help, like The kind of help that ODC provides people.
You've got a very impressive background, and we're lucky to have you at the ODC and somebody with your background in that spot and everything. It does seem a little bit different than what you're doing now. Was there something in you that you wanted to work in a nonprofit industry? You wanted to work in with a company like the ODC?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I started my career in long-term care as a social worker, and so I was working directly with clients with intellectual disabilities, physical disabilities, and mental health diagnoses. And as I kind of progressed through different areas of leadership and management and different organizations, I really felt that I was missing being back closer to the work again. And so I was really happy when I had the opportunity to come work at ODC to feel like I was a little bit closer knit to the community and back closer to the work again.
I hear it in your voice. That's awesome. That's really cool to hear. I am as excited for the ODC and our community as I am for you. I love when that happens. I get really spoiled in this job and talking to new people. And for the most part, that's how it happens, where I'm passionate about this. And this is so emotionally and physically and emotionally rewarding as well. And you're seeing more and more people doing that. That's great to hear.
Absolutely.
And happy for you. And that's good to hear. And thank you very much for the rundown there. Appreciate it. Now we got to get to work. But it's still fun because we're rewinding before we go forward. And I wanted to talk about the haunted house and how that went.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know when Anne joined you last time, she gave you a preview of what was to come. And our haunted house was just last weekend. And it was amazing. It was my first time seeing it from beginning to end. I had toured it while they were setting it up a year ago. And so I understood how vast of a project it was, but to actually see it from behind the scenes from beginning to end was absolutely remarkable. We have a handful of staff and community volunteers, which is just incredible, who literally transformed our building to be almost like a haunted maze, although it was really just a path through our entire warehouse. It was incredible. All these different scenes of creativity and design that they did to really create quite a spooky experience through our building, fully accessible. I know Anne shared all of that with you last month, but it was a great success. We had over 2,100 people that came through our doors over Friday and Saturday evening. Many, many families, all ages, individuals that were really happy to be able to have a space where you could bring a stroller through. Mm-hmm. Or a wheelchair through. It was fully accessible. So it was a really cool opportunity. Got to meet so many great folks from the community and really cool to just see how many people showed up. We had food trucks out in the parking lot. It was a really full experience event and really kind of a nice kickoff pre-Halloween to get people in the Halloween spirit.
It's becoming more and more popular every year. And just as much as that, the work and the creativity they're putting into it is getting more and more impressive every year. And it's a fun event, and that alone is well worth it. But it's also, there's a couple of other layers to it that I've talked about with Anne before, and I've talked about with people in the community about. And, you know, I was talking to a listener the other day about this, and they had just heard that the ODC had did this. This is last month, but it feels like it was the other day. And we were talking about it, and they were saying how, wow, I didn't know the ODC would do something like that, or oh, that's really cool they're doing that. And it got me thinking more and more about it, and As you might not think of it, but if you know the ODC, this is actually right up the ODC's alley, really, in many ways. Not so much a haunted Halloween event, but just something like an event that thinks of things that we don't always think about, that are gray areas in our minds and our society sometimes, that we don't always think about people that are maybe sensory issues or some other things that just aren't in our brains always right away. And part of the ODC's purpose and mission is to do that, mm-hmm. is to remind us of these gray areas, these things that we don't always see in our blind spots. Why not with a holiday like this? And what a great way to not only bring the community together, give people something to look forward to, like you said, celebrate Halloween a little bit early. I'm okay with that. I love Halloween. But also bring some attention and awareness and some people into the building and really understanding it. We're just meeting ourselves and getting to know each other. Aaron, this community has heard me ramble for years about the ODC, and my family, like many out there, were really impacted by the ODC and helped by the ODC. For every family like that, there's people out there that may have never been to the building or something. So you bring them in, bring them more attention to it. It's just such a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can say, you know, we had some folks, I was kind of in the greeting crew, and had families ask, well, you know, what's the fee, or where's the fundraiser part of this? And this really was an opportunity for us to just give back. And, you know, if people wanted to leave a donation, they absolutely could, but it was by no means a requirement. There was no surcharge. It was really just to open the doors and come and have a good time. And we felt really good about being able to do that. And we're really happy to see that people were taking up on that opportunity to have a free event.
You were listening to the Rapids Report, sponsored by Crockett Septic. To hear the full interview, visit WFHR.com, the Civic Media app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE, Wisconsin Rapids,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. President Trump is explaining after acknowledging the East Wing is being entirely demolished to make room for a massive ballroom at the White House.
In order to do it properly, we had to take down the existing structure. The way it was shown, it looked like we were touching the White House. We don't touch the White House.
California Governor Gavin Newsom speaking out after the president ordered federal agents to San Francisco.
He needs to create conditions for anxiety. He needs to create the conditions that he can, quote unquote, then solve for. So what does he do? He sends out masked men. He sends out Border Patrol.
Newsom posting his comments to X. Now to Broadway.
You'll be back. Time will tell.
King George will still have those bouncy beats behind him when the curtain goes up on Hamilton tonight. The Musicians Union has just announced a tentative agreement with producers, averting a strike that would have silenced almost two dozen musicals. CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.